Chapter 5. 3 hours after the assault commenced, the outcome moved beyond doubt. The city's perimeter was demolished or burning. The interior glowed in a jumble of radiation and steadily expanding smoke plumes. Stormbirds strafed freely, driving towards the beleaguered city centre, where three mighty cathedral domes, swollen and draped in psionic cabling, surged into the tortured skies amid a sea of unleashed plasma discharge. More Legion infantry were landed in the secured zones, and they pushed out rapidly from the drop sites, destroying remaining pockets of resistance and linking up to form preordained battlefronts. Tank squadrons trundled up hard-gouged fire lanes, their barrels superheated from rapid firing and their smokestacks belching. It was as if a noose of fire were rapidly closing about the shaken apex, unbroken and impenetrable. The last and greatest of the Nephilim, colossal creatures bloated by the most extreme acts of adoration, withdrew to their final line of defence, taking those of their slaved troops who could still stand with them into the yawning precincts of the central sanctuaries. Motivated by the dregs of a fanaticism that had once led them to enslave the stars, the Nephilim activated the rings of atomic-class explosives that would incinerate the cathedral foundations and turn the entire structure into a sacrificial offering to their imminently expiring god-caste. Had those explosives detonated, the blast radius would have been close to 50 kilometres across, more than enough to annihilate the entire front line of combatants in an orgy of mutual destruction. Perhaps the Xenos commanders calculated that the enemy would even allow them to do it, bringing a speedy end to a war that had already claimed a body count of billions. But the Khan had not sent his sons blindly into battle. The Legion had scoured intercepted Ordex lines for weeks, and the Primarch had worked his xenolexicographers hard to tease out the full implications of the Nephilim's death cult philosophy. This was combined with a long period of supraorbital scanning of the urban layers, cross-referenced with archived intelligence on culture and psychology, taken from battle reports compiled by 9th and 16th Legion strategos. Scenarios were rehearsed, contingencies drawn up, capabilities analysed. When the time came and Imperial troops were finally let loose onto Khoda, there was little the Xenos Command could do that had not been foreseen. Thus was a final wave of Legion assets held back, poised on the teleportation chambers of the fleet in readiness for one final eventuality. As the regular troops closed in on the cathedral approaches, racing up the wide stairways with blades humming, the order was given, and warp coils snarled into life across 20 separate shipborne transponders. In every atomic depot, storm seers materialized at ground level and immediately swung into action, throwing stasis fields across the degrading containment units. One by one, the countdowns froze, and escorted teams of engine seers moved in to disable the neural connectors controlling the stockpiles. While the storm seers destroyed the ring of atomics, a second phalanx of warriors, 100 strong, transported straight inside the cathedral's nave itself, materializing far ahead of the rapidly approaching Imperial battlefront to set themselves against the full concentration of remaining Xenos. They were clad, as all the warriors of the Khan's Legion now were, in ivory and gold, their cataphracti terminator plate still fizzing with warp residue, and their long glaives snarling. Lasfire opened up immediately from all sides, filling the gloomy interior with hard flashes, but the rain of impacts skipped harmlessly from such heavy armour. Then the Keshig, the honour guard of the Primarch himself, responded. A storm front of bolt shells and volkite beams blazed out from the teleport locus, shattering arches and gouging stone. The Terminators powered into the attack, still highly mobile despite their formidable bulk, crashing into the enemy amid a wall of machine noise. The surviving Nephilim hurried to engage them, surrounded by their strange auras of sonic shock and aiming their shriek pulse weaponry. But this was rank slaughter now. Their reality-ripping guns had negligible effect on armour plate, designed to withstand the physical effects of void-boarding actions, and the Terminators crashed into the enemy in a ruinous wave of servo-accelerated violence. Their leader, a towering figure with a dragon helm, crunched up the wide steps towards the cable-draped altar, a long curved blade whistling around him in disruptor-spitting arcs. A blue strobing Nephilim strode to intercept him, but was dispatched contemptuously with a dazzlingly fast figure of eight from the flaring Tulwar blade. The oldest and foulest of the Nephilim, the patriarch of the Adored, sat enthroned under the apex of the cathedral's sagging dome, its seat a forest of glistening cables and neural fronds. The creature's fish-like skin, slack with age and desperation, swelled across slippery armrests. Dozens of slaved attendants shrank back against its obscene bulk as if for protection, their disbelieving faces hidden behind neurodermic masks, too terrified even to fire the effectual weapons they still possessed. The Xenos rose tremulously to its huge feet, a swaying mountain of translucent flesh weighed down with a ceremonial cowl, its tiny black eyes sunk deep within folds of sweat-rank skin. Wearily, knowing the judgment of the galaxy had already fallen, it drew a long black blade, napped and faceted. The air around it shook, disturbed by the sonic harmonics emitted from the weapon.
"This will damn you,"
the creature intoned in broken machine Gothic through some kind of Vox translator box clamped around its jawline and trailing wet power plugs.
"I lay curse upon you."
The Dragonhelm Legion warrior did not pause or even glance at the fragile bodyguards, but launched himself into the monster before him. His first blow cracked the black blade, the second shattered it. The patriarch staggered backwards, stumbling against the throne and slipping on the bloody floor. Screams filtered up through the cathedral's high vaults, repeated and augmented by the slaughter taking place in the neural harvester chapels. The Xenos staggered away from the onslaught, panting, for the first time at eye level with the vengeful leviathan of ceramite and gold that pursued it. The Tulwar rose, casting a curved shadow across the monster's thick neck. But it never fell. The last of the killing ended in the nave beyond, and the echoes of bolter clamour slowly died away. Faint, strangled sobbing could be heard welling up from the depths, and from outside the giant walls came the muffled booms of ongoing ordnance. The patriarch focused blearily on the Tulwar's edge and cracked a dry smile.
"Thought it would be your Primarch. Would have preferred that."
Then, from the base of the stairs, a final column of teleportation energy snarled into spitting life. From its glowing heart stepped a figure in immaculate ivory and gold. A heavy crimson cloak swirled about him, caught in the eddy of the locust beam as it snapped out of existence. He carried a naked Dao blade, as long as a man's height, engraved with ancient Korchin battle curses. His face was exposed, raw and severe, the bronzed skin as hard as iron and marred by the long scar that ran the length of his left cheek. When the Khan gazed at his enemy, there was an imperiousness there, a disdain that had been cultivated over years of similar conquests. He trod the wide steps at his leisure, never looking about him, even as his assembled warriors bowed before him. The Nephilim emitted what passed for a chuckle, and fluid cascaded down its chins.
"So, will you do it then? End it here."
The Khan glanced at his dragon-helmed warrior.
"Did it fight well, Zha?"
he asked.
"No, Kargan."
"Then it doesn't deserve the honour."
He turned away, even as the master of the Keshig plunged his blade into the Nephilim's neck and hauled it out the other side, bisecting the joint cleanly. The Khan surveyed the site of battle. The blood was still hot, the screams were still audible, but already there was an impatience in him to bring this war to its conclusion, to find the next one, to seek the harder test that would temper his still bipartite legion and hammer out its remaining imperfections. But it was done. There was something to report back to Terra, something that would no doubt please the Sigilite. Comms were already coming in from both Hasek and Gearhun. They had secured their final targets and were racing one another to reach the cathedral first. Yasugai had destroyed the last of the atomic stores and was now commencing the task of recovering any slaves who still had their minds intact. 100 queries and requests for orders flashed across the Khan's retinal battlefeed, almost all of which could be delegated to field commanders, but gave an indication of the scale of what still needed doing. The Khan looked up, scanning across the high vaulting. Pods lined the walls, clogged with nutrient cabling. Many were smashed and glossy with burst liquids, but a few remained intact, cradling the fetal curl of human occupants. This building alone housed hundreds of such pods, slowly draining the energy from their occupants and feeding it to the soul gluttons who had harvested them. The chapels and silos beyond would hold thousands more, row upon row, an industrial machine city constructed around the delusions of the fearfully religious.
You were lucky, Jagatai. We tell you of old night, and you barely believe us.
Kinjar drew alongside him. He had unsealed his helm and locked it to his armour, and now his calm, steady face looked out at the horrors shackled above them.
"Initial assessment," the Khan said. 3 Terran contingents reached their forward objectives too slowly. They are still more thorough than us, though. This is something we need to preserve."
"I try to preserve everything, and we preserve nothing. I want unity of doctrine."
Kinjar let slip a wry half-smile.
"Unity?"
he asked.
"You reported tracking locks prior to our assault. Are the augurs still getting those?"
"No, but they may just be getting cleverer. Our attention has been elsewhere for a while."
"Maybe. Or maybe they are just a long way off."
"If so, more reason to be interested."
The Khan sheathed his long blade, unused in this action. Since its forging, it had been employed only sparingly, a weapon reserved for a threat worthy of it.
"You can conclude this, I trust?" the Primarch asked.
Kinjar gave a final glance at the racks of pods, the foul machinery of essence extraction, and the morbid corpses of the soul gluttons.
"It will all be destroyed," he said with some feeling.
"Not a stone left of it,"
the Khan agreed, marching down the long nave.
"Not a single one left alive. Our first soul conquest, Kagan," called Kinjar after him. "In the shadow of no others now. Cause for pride, perhaps."
The Khan kept walking.
"Not yet,"
he muttered, his boots ankle deep in blood and muck.
"Not by a long way."
The fires took a long time to die down. Hoda's sun set, but the difference in ambient light level was almost imperceptible due to the volume of ash in the atmosphere. Every city of the Nephilim was located, taken, and razed. Hunter-killer teams of Legion warriors were dispatched into the depths of the steaming jungles, shadowed by flights of auger-stuffed flyers. The last of the Xenos' void fleet was blown apart before making the jump into the warp, and squadrons of Legion frigates prowled deep into the system's depths to seek out enemy remnants and stand guard on the Mandeville points. The huge bodies of the Xenos were transported to pyre zones and immolated in heaps, scrutinized the whole time by the Emchi apothecaries and engine seers from the fleet. Initial hopes that significant volumes of slaves could be freed proved overly optimistic. Most were too damaged even for safe reuse in servitor duty, and so were euthanized in long, dreary cavalcades before being consumed by the same massed infernos. That duty was hated, causing localized insubordination from some elements of the Imperial Army regiments. When asked to issue punishment, The Khan demurred.
It's to their credit,
he told Gearhun.
Get them back into their ships. Give this task to the Legion.
So it was that slowly the Imperial Army units were withdrawn from combat, consolidated, then lifted back into the waiting orbital haulers. The remainder of the mop-up work was done by warriors of the Ordu, better equipped to survive the plentiful array of booby-trapped vaults and hab units, as well as the grim task of mass culling. A few humans did survive, though. Recent arrivals to Khoda, some even plucked from Xenos transports before they could be unloaded into the empath chapels. Yasugai was assiduous in hunting them down, sparing as many from the furnaces as he could. The healthiest were questioned, their confused responses recorded by Legion archivists and prepared for dispatch to Terror. One of them, a man calling himself Elias, was judged strong enough to be taken before the Khan. Being brought into the presence of a Primarch, even for an undamaged human, could induce extreme reactions, so hopes for genuine elucidation were slight. Still, after treatment, Elias's vital signs had recovered to within almost normal parameters, and he seemed willing enough to meet his liberator. Yasugai came with him, and the meeting took place amid the ruins of a secondary empath chapel some distance from the burning central complex. The Khan removed his helm, locked it to his armour, and folded his arms. Elias stood before him, flanked by Legion guards, looking beyond pathetic, a skinny, stooped invalid with hollow eyes.
"What was your origin world?" the Primarch asked him.
Elias looked up, for a moment too awestruck to form words. The Khan waited.
"My origin world, Pelisar, Lord. Pelisar."
The Khan glanced at Yasugai.
"Mark for scrutiny."
Then he returned to the cowering man.
"What do you know of your captors?"
Elias's face flickered into a smile, the nervous, betraying smile of guilt or fear or maybe excitement.
"Captors? You mean, Lord? I don't know. They were not..."
"The Nephilim. The giants."
"Angels."
Elias was grinning now, as if he couldn't help himself.
"Our angels."
The Khan's expression tightened.
"These places,"
he said, gesturing around him.
"You would have been next."
Elias's fragile gaze shot up to the smashed extraction pods, many still saturated with blood and flesh plug lubricants.
"We were the faithful."
He began to look confused.
"I don't know why. It's hard."
The Khan stared at him closely, as if his dark eyes could delve straight into the man's damaged mind.
"You've seen what they did here."
Elias nodded.
"Are you not angry?"
Elias shook his head.
"They taught us that..."
"They fed on you."
Elias chuckled.
"And what is better for a man but that he nourishes the gods?"
The Khan sighed and turned to Yasugai. The Stormseer was looking thoughtful.
"You see the lesson we are being given?"
the Primarch asked almost accusingly.
"A blunt one, certainly," replied Yasugai.
"Malkador must think us simple-minded."
"Still, a reminder of inherent weakness."
"You should be insulted he even tried it."
The Khan raised a finger by a fraction, and Elias was pulled away from his presence, grinning confusedly all the while.
"It changes nothing."
Yasugai looked less convinced, but did not reply. Eventually, the Khan unfolded his arms, shaking them down. Once free, his gauntlet strayed, as it always did, to the hilt of his blade.
"Hasten the cleanup,"
he growled, making to leave.
"It's time we moved on."
The 5th Legion fleet pulled out of high orbit, 7 local, roughly 9 Terran standard days later, leaving the remainder of the outstanding compliance work to be undertaken by 3 of the accompanying Imperial Army divisions. Their commander, an experienced general named Targon Clask, had initially protested, having been under the impression that the entire expeditionary fleet would remain intact and committed to full compliance activities for several weeks. However, once Hasek was dispatched to pass on the Primarch's direct expression of intent, the protests had dried up swiftly, and preparations were made for the division of forces. The 5th Legion itself would not remain unified either. In the 5 years since its first great muster in the solar system, considerable effort had been expended to propagate the new Trigorian-inspired cultural practices throughout the entire Legion. Now that Hoda had been destroyed, and in a manner that would have been recognized by any rider of the Altak, that imperative was overtaken by a more deep-seated desire to let the individual Khans have their head. Companies, more generally referred to as brotherhoods now, were given planetary coordinates to chase down, most gleaned from the addled minds of the Nephilim slaves, some taken from standing Crusade war plans, but all of them sundered across huge stellar distances. In theory, compliance assets would be sent out from Terra to complete the reconstruction of Hoda and its tributary worlds. As for when that might be, none could say. There was no effective liaison in place between the Legion High Command and the glacial structures of the Administratum. Some thought that ought to change. Others were perfectly happy with the way things were. In the absence of a clear signal from the Khan, nothing was done, and the necessary business of contact was left to Clask's extensive, overworked staff. So dispersal went ahead. The Legion flagship, completed to the Primarch's specifications 3 years previously, and christened, on a suggestion from Magos Dominus Galithium Vo Foex, no less, the Swordstorm, pulled smoothly from its orbital berth, escorted by a minimal protective cordon of 4 destroyers. Hasek had taken the Chinsa to head up his Horde division, while Gearhun had taken the Lance of Heaven, each tracing different paths into the deep void. All had their targets, spread out across the abyss like the old isolated citadels rising from outcrops on the eternal plain.
"Good hunting,"
was all the Khargan had told them both before they departed, raising a flask of Halak. Other legions would not have allowed themselves to become so diffuse, perhaps, but in this, too, was the old method honoured. The archetype of the White Scars was the hunting eagle, the predator loosed to wheel into the open sky. The Terrans had accepted it. The Trigorians understood it implicitly. Khinjar remained on the flagship, as was his duty, as did Isugai, after dividing the Legion's Sadian Aga between the various divisions.
"We will need a better system for this, Khargan," the Stormseer had told his master during the somewhat messy departure from Hoda.
"Did we have one before?"
the Khan had asked skeptically.
"We were not conquering the stars before."
"If they don't know where their fate should take them,"
the Primarch had said, waving his hand unconcernedly, closing the discussion.
"What hope for the rest of us?"
The ships had weighed void anchor then, boosting their plasma drives and setting course for the next war zone in the series. The Khan's flagship had broken the veil first, as if itching to get away from a planet where only low-grade killing had been offered, hungry to find worlds where a better class of enemy lay in wait. Once in the warp, the Primarch departed the command bridge and returned to his private chambers, taking only Khinjar with him.
"So,"
the Khan said, unhooking the cloak from his shoulders and throwing it over the back of his planes chair.
"We are still being tracked."
The Kashyyyga shrugged.
"Hard to say, Khargan. It may be an artifact of the ranged Augus, or perhaps something designed to look like an artifact of the ranged Augus, or nothing at all. What do you want me to do?"
The Khan reached for the seal of his gorget, unclipping the torque-like gold rim. Then he unfastened the leather bindings of his hair, letting the long black tresses fall loose over his ivory armor.
"We could outpace this shadow," he said. "Almost certainly, if you wished it."
The Khan smiled.
"But you'd be right to disapprove."
He went over to a low rosewood table and poured a fresh flask of fermented milk.
"It's one of ours. An inquisitive mind drawn to our light like a moth.
We're a curiosity still, I think. But which one? And do I care enough to find out?"
Qin Zha returned the smile.
"For as long as it intrigues you, yes."
The Khan drained his cup and wiped his mouth before reaching for another flask.
"Do not make it easy for them. Keep the ship moving."
He had an almost childlike expression on that grizzled face now.
"If they want to find us, they'll have to work for it.